We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet, No, we on OnlyFans, MySpace, Tinder, swiping. Which is you swiping left or right? I don't. What are we doing, Ken?
Swipe right.
Catch us ticking on the top and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Black American gun ownership rises during the pandemic. Netflix drops $30 million on Kanye West documentary.
Yikes. The hip-hop legend DMX passes at the age of 50, and Target commits $2 million to Black-owned businesses and racial equity efforts.
But first, let's jump into the CDC declaring racism a public health threat.
Say what?
Right. The director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has declared racism a public health threat that disproportionately affects communities of color. NBC News reports its latest and largest federal U.S. health agency to single out racism and its damning consequences on American society. In a statement released on April 8th, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky explained how systematic racism should be recognized as a public health crisis. To build a healthier America for all, we must confront the systems and policies that have resulted in the generational injustice that has given rise to racial and ethnic health inequities, Walensky said. Walensky also admitted how confronting the impact of racism will not be easy. As the CDC joins the American Medical Association, who also called racism a threat to public health. What we know is this: racism is a serious public health threat that directly affects the well-being of millions of Americans. As a result, it affects the health of our entire nation, Walensky declared. The social detriments of health have lifelong negative effects on the mental and physical health of individuals in communities of color. The CDC has launched Racism and Health, a new web portal designed to raise awareness and help bring about change to these findings. The CDC has also secured funding to address COVID-19 disparities. The agency will also invest in racial and ethnic communities, in addition to other disproportionately affected communities.
This is mind-blowing.
This would be a big, big, big jump forward.
Yeah. I'm not sure what earth we woke up on. This is crazy. It's definitely a public health crisis.
Yeah.
Has been since the inception of this nation. Man, the pushback on this is going to be comedic.
Right.
We're going to get all of the racist, the all lives matter, the subtle racism, you know, the microaggressions, all of that. We're going to get it all. And it's wild because all we're talking about is just people being treated equally. That's that. It.
And, there you know, I can already see some of the I grew up and didn't have anything. And it's going to be this comparison that's not a comparison. It's a Venn diagram that doesn't overlap. So it's just two circles,
just two
that
circles.
Exist. Things but people that run that, run to that defense, it's something you're not understanding. We can relate on a poor level.
Yeah.
But that's not including the weight of walking around with the anxieties that we do have on a regular that we're not aware because it's become a part of day-to-day life. But the things that we worry about, the stresses that are there. And again, this isn't from a woe is me. It's not a walking around scared to the bone, shaking type thing. And I think that's this idea that people have as if running around No, that's not it. But it's that thing that's in the back of the head of having to double think so many things, having to double think some of the most basic of actions in your daily routine.
Yeah.
As opposed to existing. So, yes, we do have we share some of the same struggles, but there is a added backpack of bricks.
Yep.
on the daily that's being carried around. You just don't see it. And understanding the effects that that does have internally because of that added pressure.
Yeah, it completely determines the way that we conduct ourselves. Just like, you know, inherently in being in different situations, we read things completely differently. Yeah. We respond to things completely differently because our response and reaction could determine whether we see the next day. You know what I'm saying? Or how difficult the rest of this day might be. The last thing I need is a police interaction. The last thing I need is someone from customer service walking over to me, asking me if I need help. You know, because you know what that means. They're following you in the store. Right. Like smiling, like simple things, like right. smiling all the time.
Right.
Even when you don't feel like it. Right. Smiling on your way out of Fred Meyer's, like, yes, everything in this bag is paid for.
Right. Making sure that that receipt is in a reachable place.
Oh, and though, man.
I don't know too many people that thought they were people's melanated skin types that throw that receipt in that trash can before the door.
No.
Nah, this going to make it all the way out.
Bruh. Till I leave the parking lot.
That part.
What? I will covet this receipt. You out your mind?
Thanks.
It's, yeah, little stuff like that. And I mean, like you said earlier, you know, not like we're just in a constant state of fear and, you know, we're just like shivering like, oh, you know, so what was me? Yeah. But like to speak to that, though, while that may not be your and I's existence, you know what I'm saying? Because we also move with a degree of privilege. One, yes. We're males. Two, yes. we're tall, big, husky men. You yes. know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
there's an energy that we've been moving with since we were in middle school.
Yeah.
And people have been treating us like grown men since we were in middle school.
Yes.
Just because of our size.
Yeah.
So there's a way that we enter a room. There's a way that we, you know, move in different spaces. Mm-hmm. There's things, there's fears that we don't even think about based on the environments we grew up in.
Yeah.
And the way we you know we've conducted ourselves. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that just isn't everyone else's experience, period. You know,
I think we had a brief conversation about this, and I don't know if this was on a previous episode or me mm-hmm. just talking because some of it blends, but it was like the idea of feeling some type of way for somebody else's actions. Right. We talk about that where mm-hmm. the weight of that, of seeing something that we would, that's kind of embarrassing, right? For ourselves yeah. that we may have witnessed happen and it became viral and we got to go into the workplace the next day. And it's this feeling of like, oh, this is going to come up because
yeah,
you were the spokesperson for Black or America at that point. And right. it's like, that's a thing that I don't see that being something that's carried.
No.
Other places.
No, no. And then there's another part to that, too. So, like, thinking about seeing how situations play out, right? Mm-hmm. There are things that you and I have discussed just about watching, you know, the way the world moves and different mm-hmm. things that have been going on that we were like, yo, if that was me in that situation, it would have went differently.
Yeah.
And there's sometimes, I don't know if this happens for you, too, but sometimes it creates a feeling of anger about the way whoever was in that situation handled it. Like, why didn't you just, why didn't you just, and it's taken, you know, conversations with myself to unpack the privilege around that again. Like, you're not going to be talking to me. Like seeing all of these Karen videos.
Yeah.
All these, you know, all these white people wilding out. Like, no, you're not around me or not.
No.
But just like, dude, understand what you're saying. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So just, you know, I was thinking about that last week. I forgot what the interaction was that I saw online. And I was just like, yeah, I can't be mad at other people. I can't be upset about them handling things in the way that I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Just because for me, that's the right way to go. Right. When I'm moving with a completely different set of privileges than that person is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I know what it means to deal with a certain degree of ramifications. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've even thought that out. So I do this, and then this happens, and then, hey, we get busy. You know? We've thought that out. There are people that have never had to deal with any of that.
Yeah.
That's not like, their environment. That's how they've, like, you know.
As I've mentioned before, there are certain scenarios and situations that we've had to report on that I'm like, my maturity, like, and when I say that, of I don't know if as calm as I am, I'm calm for a reason. Mm-hmm. I try to keep myself here for a reason, right? Yeah. I understand what my propensity for choosing violence, choosing violence is. So being in these scenarios where I'm like, you know, I definitely give a round of applause for when I see people who are able to keep that container there for stuff that I'd be like, now, like, you're this disrespect is to a level that I don't know how to turn the other cheek. I'm still a, you know, I'm a growing man.
Yes, I like it.
And so that's something that I take into account, though, with these situations that we see. And I pray all the time, honestly, of if something happens to pop up, and these phones are recording, like, all of that. Like, I can't say for sure that I'm going to be able to catch my breath in time.
Facts.
And it sucks. You know what I mean? Like, it sucks. It sucks. So, yes. Yeah. All of that.
All right.
All of that.
Speaking of things that suck, nothing sucks more than this. Like, nothing sucks more than this.
Man.
Hip-hop legend DMX passes away at the age of 50. DMX passed away Friday, April 9th, at the young age of 50 due to a heart attack. It was part of the Rough Riders crew and became one of the hottest rappers of the 90s, with record-breaking concerts like Woodstock 99, which sold out 200,000 tickets. If you haven't already seen the footage from that concert, go check it out. It is indeed unbelievable. Def Jam, the record label DMX was signed to throughout his career, released a statement. Def Jam Recordings and the extended Def Jam family of artists, executives, and employees are deeply and profoundly saddened by the loss of our brother Earl DMX Simmons. The statement reads, DMX was a brilliant artist and an inspiration to millions around the world. His message of triumph over struggle, his search for the light out of darkness, his pursuit of truth and grace brought us closer to our own humanity. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and all of those who loved him and were touched by him. DMX was nothing less than a giant. His legend will live on forever. He had been on life support at White Plains Hospital after suffering what his family called a catastrophic cardiac arrest a week earlier. Earl was a warrior who fought to the end, the Simmons family said. He loved his family with all his heart, and we cherish the times we spent with him. The family appreciates the love fans all over the world have shown.
Get at me, dog. Bruh. That song been in my head nonstop for the last couple days. This was one of those that, you know, for me, being on the West,
mm-hmm.
DMX coming out around the time, like, the end of the Death Row era.
Mm-hmm.
My memories of DMX when he came out, I feel like he was the stop the shiny suit stuff for the East Coast.
Yeah.
And got it back to a grimy that I could appreciate. I know I might get murdered in comments one day. Like, the Wu-Tang never increased a single thing in my brain, heart, mind that said, yes, this is it. Again, I respect what they've done for the genre, but him, and when he came out, it was something different. And I remember a woman that was a girl at that time, young lady. That time, had his first album, and hearing the prayer, there was him talking through was.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, that stood out to me so much. And then just seeing the, how fast, how big, and then to drop the two projects. And this is before the dropping a mixtape every 2 months. This is before any of that.
Right.
And as we talked about that footage in this, that is something different. This ain't 200,000 of people happen to be there and he performed. No, there was 200,000 people there and 199,800 were mouthing the lyrics. They were doing all the things.
Right.
And that's a different type of energy. And with DMX, DMX was so him from the jump. And when we say that, like, on a different level.
Yeah,
where completely. The celebrity portion, that was never a thing for him. Mm-mm. And to be as seen as so rough and rugged, most of people's stories and interactions paint this is a human that actually cared about things.
Right. Very tender with people. Very, yes, yes.
Yes. Which is, like, that's been the dope thing in his passing, is it isn't a bunch of slander, and it's been people sharing things, like him getting the broom and sweeping at a Waffle House or wherever that was, just because him saying he was having a good day, he felt good, he knew that the worker had been working a long shift, and why not?
Right.
Why can't I help sweep this floor, mop this floor right quick, wipe down a counter? Like that.
Yeah.
You are Dark Man X. You
Dark Man X.
Don't got to do none of that. And so just, I think there's been, the love is what's being shown around this one. And I love that for him and for the culture in general.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely appreciate, you know, from a West Coast perspective, we experienced the same thing. Like when he came out, you're right. Like it shattered the shiny suit era. Like it was like, oh, that's what we doing? We ain't doing that no more. sorry, but you know, Wu was doing it too, but you know, the goggles, we rocking the goggles on our head now. Yeah. Like, everybody's dog chains got thicker.
Look.
Know, gauge went up on the dog chains.
Look, like silver was being sold at an all-time high.
Bruh. Like, you don't have a pit? Is it really a dog then?
Right.
Like, dude definitely came through with the energy that was just, like, unmatched. It was like, what is happening? And I remember hearing him on 4321 Remix. Mm. Well, yeah, 4321 with with everyone else on there, with Math and Red and LL and Cannabis. When X's verse starts, that Stay Out the Dark, when that joint starts, it's just like, holy smokes. Yeah. Everybody just chill out. Stay, like, stop moving. Everybody stop moving. Like X's energy is incredible, man. Like, incredible. Gonna have to edit that. it's X, man. I don't
bring out of you.
Yeah, that's what he bring out. How we gonna talk about X Night throwing all types of bombs? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I don't deal well with death in the way that I can't in the moment. I can't process in the moment. Yeah. It always takes a while for me. Like sometimes like a year, 2 years.
Yeah.
It was the same way with Biggie. Like when it happened, I was just like, I understand what y'all saying. Same thing with Pac. I understand what y'all saying. But with Pac, was a little bit different because music kept coming out.
Yeah.
With Big, it wasn't until like we went 2 summers without a single. And I was like, oh no, he's gone.
Yeah.
Like it's over for this artist.
Yeah.
DMX's music is so incredible that it didn't take any new releases from him.
Right. Right.
For him to still be running it.
Right.
These songs are moments in time. Like, you put on any of his hits, it's just like, oh, whole energy the room changing. No one's going to look at you like, why'd you play that? This isn't for that.
Ever.
What?
Ever. And had a song for all the things.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
In speaking of like the idea of death, and I had a moment to talk about this a little bit in regards of the public's response to it,
yeah,
specifically in our social media outlets. Mm-hmm. And I used to be on the side of the fence of why are people getting emotional about a celebrity passing away?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely was on the side of like, y'all are doing too much. It's not, that's not that serious. Like,
right.
Yeah, death sucks, but come on. It wasn't until for me first with Nip of feeling like when I found it being that I can tell you everything that was going on when the first news, the first tweet came out, like the first tweet and legitimately being set those moments of like, as if my friend, and there'd be moments of 2 weeks of going and then be like, oh no, he's really
gone. Yeah.
Like, And that was an immediate feeling. Ooh. And why that impacted me was because his music and being a fan from before he was popular, I connected in a certain way because it was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I had to think about that how music hits people, why music hits people.
Yeah.
In the way that it does is a lot of times you have these artists who are getting people through things.
Yep.
So they're connected in a different type of way, even though they don't know this person, this song expressing their personal struggle, their joy, whatever it may be that somebody was able to connect with and got to feel like, oh, somebody else feels this thing. And more so somebody at this type of a level feels my actual feelings and what I'm emotionally going through. And sometimes these people lay out the blueprint.
Yep.
You know? And so when that's removed, there is a grief that can come with that. And so my understanding of that now is different, right? I still don't, I'm not a fan of the bandwagoners. Like, and I always point out when Heavy D passed away, like, you know, rest in peace to the man. But it was like, were you guys, or did you just want to put up an RIP post? Because Heavy hadn't been doing much in the way of, but, you know, again, not that there's any lesser impact on his family and circle, but it's one of those things that I've definitely changed that, because it's like the way a teacher, you can have a teacher that impacted you may have not had any impact on the other 20 students in there,
right?
But it hit for you. And that's something that you're going to take with you and you carry through the rest of your life. Is something that teacher may have showed you how to do a math trick to remember, or how to do a formula a certain way, and it stuck.
Yep.
Or it may have just been some of the talks before class, after class, a quick moment of coaching that just worked for you. And you carry that. And I started to put that in the context of music and these artists and why people connect in that type of a way.
Right.
Outside of just the good feelings about a song or it being related to a party. And it was like, oh, now I remember, you know, homecoming and that type of thing. But more so where that lyric hit in a way that it was like, dawg, you said it. I felt it. I experienced that. I know what that's like. You know what that's like. Now we got some type of a bond,
right?
And even though it may be it seemed like a one-sided thing, you know, it's speaking to you, but that's where people are. And I think that in this display, I've allowed myself to not be frustrated at all of people showing their love and respect, but also doing it from the lens that the impact that he had was huge, both coasts, but then outside of just that, who he was as a man, take the music out of that, his struggles and everything were on Front Street.
Yeah,
he never played it up like he had it figured. He continuously talked about these struggles.
Yep,
very open and honest about where he was at with it. And as we know, people who are like that, you find a way to love them because you know who they are and what to expect, which is something real, which can be a lot in moments, right? It can be a lot. I can see how DMX probably was a lot for some people in the moment, right?
Yeah.
But it was always coming from a real place. And that's the difference, you know, can be the difference in how some other people operate. But I feel this one, and I'm glad that he gave what he was able to give. And I'm also glad that he lived his life the way that he lived his life, which seemed to clearly be on his terms.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to his family, you know, shout out to the artists in their orbit. Shout out to the whole Rough Riders camp. You know, I know it's hard on everybody, you know, but especially those most closest to him.
I definitely feel like Kawasaki owe him some.
Hello.
Look, the Rough Riders movement. Come on.
What?
Motorcycles. Galore. Four-wheelers galore. Cut the checks. Straight up. Portion of proceeds from 98,
you know, there we go.
2000 and something.
There it is.
Yeah. Y'all saw record numbers for them years.
Come on, man.
Record sales.
Crazy turn up.
Man, well, yes. Let's jump over into this next one. We got a Black American gun ownership rising during the pandemic.
Pew, pew.
Bang, bang.
Hey.
Black Americans are buying more guns during the coronavirus pandemic. According to a recent survey by the National Shooting Sports Foundation via Forbes, there was a 58.2% increase in gun purchases by Black men and women during the first half of 2020 when the COVID-19 pandemic began to sweep through the United States. We are arming ourselves for self-defense. Philip Smith, founder and president of the National African American Gun Association, told the publication, "We are not arming ourselves to go out and attack. We just want to live our lives peacefully with our families and loved ones, and we just don't want to be attacked." The industry group also says the increase in firearm sales among African Americans was the highest in any demographic during the period. Forbes reports that racial tension is a primary cause for the spike. Background checks for gun purchases surged to a record 39.69 million.
Mm-hmm.
Many Americans use their stimulus checks to buy guns, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Sorry. I don't know.
No, that's a point to laugh at because they not lying. Feds watching. They know what I spent. They know what I spent some of my stimmy on. The feds is trying to out me. Mind your business, feds. Mind your business.
Black Americans represent a relatively small percentage of gun owners. The NSSF reports that 9.3% of gun owners are Black men and 5.4% are Black women. White men make up 55.8% of gun owners, while 16.6% are white women.
55.8%. Mm. Bruh, bruh. Mm. I mean, first off, let's just say it. The pandemic, yes. The mm-hmm. Trump presidency, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For those numbers to be what they are, it's a clear indication that Black people felt less and less safe over the last year. Some change.
That is exactly.
I am from the East Coast, tri-state area, Philadelphia, mm-hmm. New York, New Jersey. The city that I was raised in was in the top 10 for most violent cities per capita for years. Camden wasn't too far away. I've had I got my first gun permit right after September 11th.
Okay.
And got it renewed right before, not too long before I moved out here.
Okay.
And during that entire period, I never purchased a firearm. Like,
yeah.
Been in all the situations with all the craziness that can be happening over there. Never purchased a firearm.
Yeah.
Moved to Portland. Lived here. I got here, what, 2016?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, during this period in which the feds was watching, a firearm purchased.
Yeah.
Racists out here wilding. Yeah.
Very much so. And I think there also being the increase in seeing, based on these tensions rising and seeing a lot of these public displays of intimidation with big old guns showing up to peaceful walks,
right?
showing up to combat yard signs,
and t-shirts.
And so, you know, I've definitely will say my STEMI didn't go to it, but I'm in the space. I've definitely had my license for quite a while. I've also been an owner for majority of my life.
Right.
And, you know, I like that it was highlighted by Philip Smith that we're not arming ourselves to go out and attack. This is never the idea. It is for protection.
That's right?
And this is the space that we're in of feeling like we need an extra element
to protect
for
us.
Our protection.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that wild, listeners? Isn't that wild, America?
Look.
Huh? Gun ownership among the Black community surged because we feel unsafe. Wow. The numbers are there. The feds know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
the federalities definitely.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, again, like you already referenced, we got copping a whole bunch and then we just started running out and started wilding. No.
Yeah.
Everyone copped and is sitting at home chilling, minding our own business, going about our lives the way we normally do. On the other end of the spectrum, we're seeing an increase in mass shootings.
Look, that thought was in my head. You pulled it out and articulated it. But I was legitimately the idea of wondering, with those numbers that have went way up, I wonder if there's data out there to see those numbers going up. Is there a up or increase in the number of incidents, gun-related incidents at the hands of the blacks?
Yeah.
Just wanted to see, because we definitely are seeing the increase in gun violence on the other side.
Mm-hmm. We see those numbers. Yeah. They're out there. They exist. Mm-hmm. Cough the numbers up, feds. Target commits $2 billion to black-owned businesses in racial equity efforts. Target announced a commitment to spend more than $2 billion with black-owned businesses by the end of 2025. Jeez. According to the statement the company released Wednesday, April 7th, the Minneapolis-based retailer says it will add products from more than 500 companies owned by black people and engage with them to add to the customer shopping experience. Sounds like we need to get the Nine brand up in Target. I'm just saying. Also, the company is introducing its Forward Founders program, which will bring in more resources to help black vendors grow and scale their businesses. The bold actions we're announcing today reflect Target's ongoing commitment to advance racial equity for the black community, said Christina Hennington, Target Corporation's Executive Vice President and Chief Growth Officer, said in the statement. They also represent significant economic opportunity for hundreds of new black-owned companies who we look forward to doing business with for years to come. The company already has programs geared towards helping minority-owned businesses that work with them, like Target Accelerators and the Black-Owned Vendor Fair. For example, in the beauty category, there are 50 black-owned and black-focused brands that are sold on Target's shelves. That's tight.
Yeah. So there's this, definitely that these efforts right there, this is all the thing. Because that's not even, they didn't give a loan. That's a couple years.
Yeah.
So that's a.
Yeah, that's around the corner.
That's if we broke that down, that's like a, what, 500 million each year? That's an impact. When I think about the beauty, the beauty products, black owned products, and how they're put into stores, I've always kind of had this gripe with there being this section.
Yep.
Versus the integration of this as a product. And I understand if they're doing it more to the highly. Thought is like making it easy to find within this stuff, but it's, I don't know. I think I go back and forth with that in moments, because if people are coming in looking for the product, they know what the product is like.
Yeah.
As opposed to how we know now to go to that section versus just going to the shampoo, just going to, you know, the hair gel or curl activator, whatever it is. Right. But so I go back and forth with that sometimes, where is it like the highlight versus, but then we've also seen the raggediness of that being the only section that's locked or fiberglassed in.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, but outside of that, let's stick to what's great about this, the monies.
Yeah, exactly. That's going
to be pouring into these things, and I think that's, we're going to see a lot of people definitely benefit from that, and that's what we want to.
Yeah, I want to follow up on this and see what, you know, what the portal looks like for black vendors to get involved in having their products in Target locations. I want to see what that process looks like.
I might have because, to a little shea butter mix put together. Hello. a little lock cream.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. But like you were joking, but like Nine Brand, I wouldn't want the Nine Brand to be in like the black clothing section.
Yeah.
It just needs to be another brand existing with everything else in the store. Yeah. That's it.
I sit right there next to the by the Hanes in the Good and Company.
Hello. Good and Company. Yep. Oh, snap. Well,
as we talking big dollars, hey, Netflix drops $30 million on a Kanye West documentary. A new report claims that Netflix dropped a multi-million dollar bag on a Kanye West documentary. According to a report from Billboard on Tuesday, April 6th, sources say that Netflix spent somewhere north of $30 million to acquire a miniseries that contains two decades worth of footage obtained by a music video and filmmaker who have been documenting Ye's life and career for over 20 years.
Yikes.
The 21-year documentary will be presented as a multi-part series and is set to become available on Netflix later this year, according to Billboard. Yeesh. The docuseries, which will be produced by the duo's creative control company, an Emmy-winning subsidiary of Time, will charter West's ascension to the top of the charts, his relationship with his mother, Donda West, his reaction to her death, unseen home video footage, and clips of him in Chicago in the 1990s. The series will cover his failed 2020 presidential run, as well as the impact of fame on him, and his fame on the world. It is unclear if it will delve into West's ongoing divorce from Kim Kardashian or keep its focus on his early life and career. West will not be involved in the production, another source told Billboard, but he has given Cootie and Chike his implied consent for them to move forward with the project by way of granting them access to his life for the past 21 years. It's going to be interesting to see how Kanye became Kanye.
This
heavy. Thing,
it, dog. And it's dropping this year?
Yeah, and also him not being involved in a way of leading, so this story is able to be told from a point of view.
That might not be so favorable.
Oh,
wowzers.
I will be docuseries'd in as soon as this drops, because I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, yeah. I was wrestling with it. Like, you know, because, you know, I'm on the outs with Kanye.
I
might have to check this out.
Yeah.
For science.
Science purposes. You know, the reason for me why this jumps in, and this is going to be a kind of a funky comparison, but like thinking of who he was, why the world fell in love with him, why the culture fell in love with him originally.
Yeah.
Up until the now.
Yeah.
And understanding the effects and the weight of fame, money, understandings, power. I immediately think about a conversation I had with on Calculated Conversation back when we were running that, and it was talking about mental health, and it talked about people becoming houseless and how you could be the most normal functioning, had been the most normal functioning person, but then being put into these conditions, what that will start doing to your mind over time, and essentially the breakdown that starts to happen and how that starts being reflected in your actions and how you view the world. And that's why we have so many people that, you know, we may have grown up with that were the crazy person in the neighborhood, but your parents can tell you about when he used to be the most popping person everybody knew.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so, like, I think about that. When I think about him and how that slowly, like, everybody isn't built for certain things.
Yeah.
Like,
facts.
In the weight of, like, I can't imagine, right? I can't imagine what that type of money, with that type of power, the things you've seen, the people that have, like, been a part, and I'm sure it's a lot of wild stuff. Again, his connection with his mother, we knew how important that was. It's just, it's so many elements, and I'm not caping for him. But just seeing how that, and if this person has this, we'll be able to see some of the progression.
Yeah.
In the real behind the scenes way, not what's been put out for us to see in terms of music videos and seeing him, you know, become more eccentric in his ways of doing things. We're able to see behind that. And I'm interested to see if we will be able to see the delineation that happened.
Be able to track it. Hit the moment and be like, and this is when everything changed.
That.
I feel you. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, one of the reasons for me wanting to watch it. Want to get, you know, a better understanding of who Kanye is, you know.
Yeah.
We only know so much from the outside. We have ideas. Yeah. We have glimpses of who he is.
Yeah.
We remember. And just the ability to share in some of the moments as he was coming up to be able to see what that looked like from the inside. You know what I'm saying? Like, first time we heard Graduation, and what did that look like as they were putting it out? I can't imagine, like, who's going to be in this miniseries based on just the places and spaces that he was in and the people in those environments. Like, it's going to be wild. This thing is going to be wild. This is more break the internet type docuseries. Like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. This is going to have that impact to a million. I can guarantee. I would love to see the numbers of this. Like, I hope they release.
Yeah.
release.
Gotta see the streaming numbers. Yes. Gotta see the streaming numbers for that. Straight up.
Well, make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., mm-hmm. 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Facts. Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Mattingly needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death. Then they need to be convicted.
Yes. Yes, that's what we're asking for.
And also, while we're here, Derek Chauvin needs to be convicted.
Bruh, get him out the paint. Period. Stop. 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 I saw a meme somewhere. It was like, you want to know what white privilege is? A trial that's lasted this long for a murder we all watched.
All this for 50.
Boom.